Welcome back to Hollywood Squares.
I want to be out of the bunker.
Oh, wait, this is Hoops HD. Welcome back
to
Hoops HD.
I want to get out of the bunker. I've been in the bunker for 8 days. 8 days.
Welcome back to Hoops HD. This is our bracket rundown show. I'm your host, Chad Sherman, with a full panel of Hoops HD and bracketology experts here tonight. Let me start by quickly introducing everybody. We've got one side of me, I've got John Salica, Joby Fortson, the other side, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org, and John Titel, one of the best selection committee guessing experts on the planet. And directly below me, Matt Zukowski, and a picture of David Griggs, who is, you know, really locked in that bunker today. We didn't even get a video of his feet out of there tonight.
So which am I? Am I a Hoops HD expert or a bracketology expert?
You're none of the above.
Yeah. You're in solitary confinement.
Yeah.
You're the comic relief, okay?
Oh, is that what I'm good for?
This is a bracket rundown show. What we do on this show is I've asked everybody, all seven of us have submitted a 1 through 50 list of who we feel the top 50 teams in the nation are right now. Kind of did a cross-country top 25-esque scoring of that and came up with a ranking of everybody, took that list and used it to create a seed list, and from that a bracket of what we feel of what our consensus NCAA tournament would be as of the start of play, at least here on March 5th, 2018. That's Monday night. And so obviously any games that take place this evening, such as Gonzaga's game tonight, would not be factored in here. But as a result of this list, we've come up with a bracket that we're going to reveal. And David, why don't we start by asking you to to define a few terms we're going to use, like the term protected seed. What is that?
It means your team's highlighted in yellow.
David, we don't have any audio from you. We've got to work on that.
Oh, okay. Now can you hear me?
Okay, there you go.
Well, we're having technical difficulties here in the bunker. That, you know what the best thing would be, Chad, if you just let me out of here? Then we wouldn't have these issues. But a protected seed, it basically means you're highlighted in yellow. That's the real thing. But technically what it is that you are protected from a home court advantage. So Lipscomb, for instance, just won the tournament or the ASUN tournament. They will be in the NCAA tournament, most likely in the 15 to 16 seed range. They will be playing a protected seed. That means that they probably wouldn't send that seed to Nashville to face them in the round of 64. And you're only protected for one round.
Now,
what it practically means is that you're playing a team in the round of 64 that was not inside the bubble.
Yeah, and the other team term we may use is bubble teams. If you don't know what a bubble team is, then you really got to learn a little bit.
Joining us for the first time.
you're not joining us if you don't know what a bubble team is.
It's the teams that the last few teams that are going to be in versus the top two teams that are out, which we will reveal at the end. But what I'm going to do is start by revealing the top four teams at least in order. Then we're going to kind of do a single line at a time. So a lot of time in this show talking about that bubble, the last few teams in. But I don't think it's a surprise. Joby, let me start with you, being a Virginia guy, that once again, the number one team is your Virginia Cavaliers.
They are making me nervous from time to time, but they keep winning. They keep being good teams, and the win at Louisville is a desperate Louisville team. They beat a Notre Dame team with Bonzi Colson in his second game back. They're clearly better. So they keep winning. They keep doing what needs to be done. Are they a dominating team? No, but nobody else has a resume, and no one else is not making mistakes.
Louisville is certainly a team that is not making mistakes in that game.
We actually were recording our last show during that game, and you could hear the cries as we watch what happened. Matt, you are a Big East guy, and the number two team was Villanova. A little bit close between them and another team that we'll get to in a second here, but Villanova is still cruising in at number two overall.
Yeah, I had Xavier 2, Villanova 3. I gave Xavier the benefit of the outright title. It's pretty close. I think whoever goes further in the Big East tournament or say Nova wins it, probably be higher up the S-curve, and it might be just for one seed, depending on what happens in the Big 12 or ACC tournaments.
Yeah, one thing to consider is on the team sheets, the conference record. If Villanova wins this tournament, although they were in second place, their conference record will be at least as good as Xavier's, maybe one game better depending on when Xavier goes out, and they will have beaten Xavier twice, maybe a third time. So, yeah, if Nova wins this tournament, I don't see how in the world you can keep Xavier ahead of them. Just saying.
Well, Tytel, let me ask you here. I've got Xavier did come in number three. Do you see us getting two Big East teams on the top line here? Consider that they will. That's one of them is going to have to lose before the end of the season at this point.
So it's a combination of factors in that if one of them gets eliminated in their opening round tournament game this week, and one of the two seeds you're going to put up shortly wins their conference tourney, then it's possible like a Duke or a Kansas might leapfrog. I don't know how likely it is, but possible.
And the fourth one seed, Rocco, I don't think this was any surprise. It was almost unanimous that that's Kansas here. But being the fourth one seed, how susceptible are the Jayhawks falling down to that two line?
They are. I think if they don't win the conference tournament, it opens the door for Duke and it opens the door potentially for Auburn. I know North Carolina has a ton of quadrant one wins, I believe 11. If they won the ACC, they would actually have a pretty good case as well to get above the Jayhawks. So the Jayhawks need to take care of business in the Big 12 tournament to wrap that up.
Can I ask
you? Go ahead.
Well, it might be what you were about to get to. Like it was just brought up, there's a debate on which city to send Xavier to.
Exactly. Let's go, David. And maybe I wanted to ask Salika this actually, because Detroit is a little closer to Xavier, but Xavier fans may not want to go there.
No, well, I don't want to go there. Does anybody want to go there? I mean, does anybody particularly enjoy spending time there?
I think if you go on our boards and our bars, Nashville seems to be the preferred destination. I'm certainly not seeing any favor as far as Pittsburgh goes.
I'll tell you. You ask me, do I want to go to Nashville or Detroit? I'll take Nashville 10 times out of 10. That's but when you look at it, we are revealing here the projections of where teams will go and who their matchups will be as well. So I just want to note that as these teams get revealed.
Yeah, and the committee, well, the computer will send them to the closest city, which I think is Detroit. But the committee, as long as they can get, they do move it around a little bit. If they can get more teams within 400 miles by sending them to Pittsburgh or Nashville, they'll do that, even if Detroit is technically closest.
Chad, honest question for our audience and for me, that just as a reminder, I know Virginia would be called and say, hey, where do you want to go? You know, Charlotte is the obvious answer. Do they do that for all the number ones? They walk through the protectors? Is it just for the top like one? Is it just Virginia that will get that call?
I know the answer to this, but...
The way that it works is that anybody in contention for the number one team overall is – this came in play, I believe, last year or the year before, that that the committee does contact every school that is in contention for number one overall and ask them what city they want to play their first and second round games in. So in this scenario here, while Xavier would be contacted and asked where they want to go, they will not necessarily get that choice. Virginia, in this case, would get that choice, which is why – Pro flies is actually closer to Pittsburgh from Virginia, but we're still projecting them to Charlotte because I think they prefer to go there.
They will.
And another thing, it is like it's part of the championship criteria. In order to participate in an NCAA championship event, with about 3 or 4 weeks to go in the season, they submit stuff, and it's just basic things like your roster size, your travel. It's so they can get things ready for the tournament, to book the travel. One of the questions is how many credentials would you need? What would your travel party be? And it's this way for all the sports. And it's due. And one of the questions on there is where would you like to go for basketball? So they actually ask, quote unquote, all 351 teams. But I think they only really take it into consideration for the overall number one.
Anyway. Let's go ahead. I'm going to review the entire two line at the same time here. And as I'm up here, Tytel, let me go back to you. We see that Duke and North Carolina came in fifth and sixth overall, followed by Purdue and Auburn. What are your thoughts on that? And do any of those teams surprise you that they were on the two line?
Not really. I think we had most of them on last week, and I don't think they did anything of grave concern this week. Obviously, the amazing Duke North Carolina game, which was a tale of two halves, but to lose on the road at Duke is certainly nothing to penalize Tar Heels for too much. Purdue had a great run in the Big Ten tourney, just couldn't get over the hump at the end. I don't know about Auburn. I mean, Rocco is trying to sell them as a really great team, and like they've had a lot of great wins this year, and if they win the SEC tourney, I consider them for number one. But Rocco, like, you really think if they go in the SEC that they're going to be a number one seed?
Interesting question, John. And it's something I've had to think about a lot because I was surprised during the bracket reveal on February 11th that they were the five overall. At that time, I thought they were right around where we have them today at eight or nine. And I had to really consider them as an opportunity to get a one. Now they've stumbled and lost a couple times in the last month. So, you know, they're going to have to beat, I think, at least three tournament teams on the run to the title in the SEC tournament to really have a legit shot to take over Kansas. But just based on that bracket reveal is the reason why I'm still considering them.
Matt, let me ask you about Duke and North Carolina here. Interestingly, we have North Carolina as the number six overall team. They're also the sixth seed in the ACC tournament, amazingly enough. But they and Duke are both on the same side of the ACC bracket opposite Virginia. Assuming that one of those two makes it to the ACC final against Virginia, is that the team that could knock one of these Big East teams off the top line?
I think Duke can. I no longer think Carolina. Actually, I think there's a fairly big divide between five and six, where I think currently it's four for three. I think for the one seed, like Virginia's locked in, and that's the other four for three. And after that, I think Carolina, we have them as number six. If they won the ACC tournament, maybe they'd be five instead of Duke six. But, like, I can't see Carolina getting on the one line anymore. And the other one,
if they beat Duke and Virginia next week?
I still think, yeah, too many losses overall on the season.
All right. Stalika, I'm going to reveal the three line here for you. There they are. At number 10 was Michigan. 9 was Tennessee. 10 was Michigan State. 11 Cincinnati. 12 Michigan. And the first question is, how about those Wolverines suddenly all the way up to the three line?
I had them, just inside the protected seed, but I can see where the case could be made for Michigan because during the conference season, they actually played the toughest schedule where they were swept by Purdue, at least as far as the regular season. They split Ohio State, but after the Big Ten tournament, they now have a two-game sweep of Michigan State. They have a win against Purdue on a neutral floor, and even a win against Nebraska is going to pad their power numbers as well. So the case can certainly be made.
I actually had them ahead of Michigan State. Why would Michigan State be ahead of them? They lost to them twice, and they had fewer good wins.
But the Wolverines don't have Spartans on their uniform.
True. Oh, okay. Makes sense.
Just saying.
I was Rocco, I think you're a proponent of this Michigan over Michigan State. They also want to put both those profiles up. And
look at them. I mean, it's
Michigan's
got twice as many quadrant one wins. They beat them twice head-to-head outside of Ann Arbor. I mean, those are two pretty significant factors. The RPI is better for Michigan than Michigan State. They've got a conference tournament title. I think they're both sitting pretty solid at number three level. But if one of them did get passed up, I would think it'd be Michigan State, not Michigan.
I just look at it, though, Matt. The predictive matrix all favor Michigan State. Michigan has the two kind of questionable losses that Michigan State doesn't have. There's a few factors that really do favor the Spartans, aren't there?
Yeah, that I'd say, I think that, but predictive matrix, I still think Michigan State's the better team just doing that. I mean, I probably should, I had like probably a five-team divide between the two. There's probably not quite that, but it's still like, I still think, I would be surprised if Michigan's a three seed in the actual bracket, even though we're doing our own thing in that, but I still kind of think Michigan's getting up on the four line for the real tournament.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and reveal the four seeds also here. There they are. And Rocco, let me ask you about them. West Virginia 13, Texas Tech 14, the Zags 15, and Wichita State 16.
I like all of them. I do have Arizona slightly ahead of Gonzaga. I do think you know, this is an interesting conversation I had with Kyle Lamb a while back. I think this is where geography really starts to play, because I actually, if I was doing a true seed list, I'd put Gonzaga, Arizona between 17 and 19. But when they're that close to 16, you might as well put one of them in a geographical favorable position in the West to sell the tickets. I mean, at the end of the day, this is a NCAA's biggest money-making event. And I think as long as they're 17 or 18, they can redoctor that seed list that they release to the public later. Again, this might be some type of conspiracy theory, but if it's that close, very easy to explain to the public. So I have Arizona just slightly ahead of Gonzaga, but if Gonzaga beats St. Mary's, that gets them another quality win, probably pushes them back ahead. So I'm okay with the four line.
Well, Titel, Arizona, that's your school there, and there's their profile. And they did beat Cal, barely.
Barely. So we started at the bar, which we normally go to for the alums in D.C., and the Dish Network wasn't working that night, so they sent us to bar number two. They didn't have it, so we went to bar number three, who was hosting a Duke-UNC party. They're like, we can put you on one TV, but we're turning it off as soon as it tips off for the other game. So we begged them to keep it on, thank God, because it was tied with 5 minutes left, and we're panicking, and somehow it pulled it out at the end. But a miserable experience. And a horrible win, but a win is a win. Not the best profile. I mean, a bit of a home – they're both home court heroes. The metrics seem pretty similar, so I can live without them on the four line.
Yep.
What's scary? Look at that. Arizona only has one win over a team surely in the field.
And Michigan State only has two.
Yeah, and Joby, one of the interesting things here, when you look at what we've done already, we do have three Big Ten teams in here already. We may only see one more Big Ten team the rest of the way.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to it when we get to the bubble talk, but I think the silliness of Penn State and Nebraska.
What, you don't think Ohio State's in?
We'll get there.
I said one more.
Nebraska and Ohio State.
I fell.
This is the NCAA show, David, not the NIT.
They're not going to the NIT.
That's because the dark web will not let them. They'll have to be
right.
The
I mean,
instead.
Could pull up the five line here, and Stalika, let me bring you back in here. There is Arizona, who we just discussed, and Ohio State, who we just discussed, along with Clemson and Florida. Clemson, the team that had been in the protected seats for a while, now dropping out of there.
Well, part of the reason Clemson would slip out would be the loss to Syracuse to end the regular season. But at the same time, a couple other things I look at. Florida starting to look like a protected seed. We thought they might be at the beginning of the year. Getting the season sweep of Kentucky is going to be relevant this year. But in the East region, we also have a nice little regional rivalry that we probably could discuss a little bit more often, and that's West Virginia and Ohio State.
There we go. West Virginia, Ohio State, but out in San Diego of all places. But Matt, Florida, interestingly enough, the teams that are seeded 11 through 14 in the SEC tournament, they went 2-5 against. They went, I believe, 9-2 against the rest of the SEC. What do you do with that?
Well, hey, they play great against tournament teams. That's what they're going to be facing in March. You know? And that's, I think it might just be they play sort of the level of their competition. They have so many good wins that, like, yeah, they're – I think if they won the SEC tournament, they would actually get out to the four line. But.
And what's interesting, Chad, is in the J&G, there's a power component of your record against the field. And it's weighted – you know, a win over Virginia is better than, for instance, a win over St. Mary's, which is at the tail end of the field probably. And Florida has the sixth best power quotient in that important category. It's amazing. They're only behind like the Villanovas and the Kansases and the Virginians. I mean, it's they have some powerful wins, but you mentioned their overall record could be better, and they obviously have just a ton of quadrant two and three, and they even won quadrant two and three losses. So it's really tough, but man, those wins you just look at and go, wow.
Titel, do you ever remember seeing a profile like this before?
Pretty full of wins and losses and all sorts of other stuff.
It kind of reminds me of Butler last year, had sort of a similar profile. But that Butler team was a four seed, but I think Butler might have had not quite the two, like, quads of three or whatever the equivalent last year of level losses.
Butler had a lot of good wins last year.
Well, they had the sweep of Villanova and actually finished second overall in a balanced Big East, but I'm trying to remember what they did out of conference last year.
Quite a bit, really. You know.
Here's a sixth line. Rocco, we've got Kentucky, Miami, Seton Hall, and TCU. This was fairly consistent. Most of us had both four of these teams around this area, but do you know anything that shocks you there?
Nothing shocks me. I have three of those four. TU on the line. I just had Houston one spot above them, but pretty much a coin flip, and there's a lot to complain about with Houston. So I like it.
All right, yeah. And David, let me go right ahead and give the seven line also here. Speaking about Houston, there they are, along with A&M, Arkansas, and Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I didn't have Houston quite this high, I don't think. I like their team, but it's just when you look at their paper and you look at the teams around them, it isn't quite there. Texas A&M, I just am not seeing what everyone else is seeing.
Well, let me ask something about this Houston team. Rocco, for example, you had Houston number 24 overall. Titel, you had them 36 overall. That was a huge difference, 12 spots in this Houston team. So maybe I'll throw it to both of you as to what you like or don't like about this Houston profile. Rocco, let me ask you first and then Titel.
Yeah, I think Titel's got a good chance to convince me to go lower. I'm not 100% sold on it, on them. I think it's just the fact that their RPI is in the top 20. Their metrics are in the top 20. They also, you know, they have a couple of really good wins, but they also have the Drexel loss. Also, in previous years, committee has looked at the American Conference. I think at least last year they did, as more of a mid-major level, which means, you know, they'll actually need to prove more to get into the seed range. Could easily drop down to an 8 or 9. So I'll be looking at them a lot closer throughout the week, but. For now, just based on all the problems with the other sevens or eights, I've got them just above them.
No, actually, real quick, Rocco, I agree with you historically on the American, but remember the bracket reveal, they did have Cincinnati as the number 8 overall. So I wonder if they did fresh in eyes, maybe because of Wichita being there.
Well, Titel, can you help convince him that he's got them way too high?
I mean, the non-conference strength of schedule is not going to be a convincing argument, nor is the 6-5 road record. It's the tier one, and I mean, and Drexel, we're trying to forget that one. When you beat Cincinnati and Wichita State, that sends a message, because when you think about it, 5 years ago, I forget how long ago the American existed. I don't know if it was 5 years ago. Now you're telling me that the top two teams in the American are ranked and or seeded higher than the champion of the Big Ten Conference? Unbelievable.
I also want to address this Arkansas team that's up on the screen there. Joby, you had Arkansas 26 overall. Sleeka, you had them all the way down to 37. Joby, let me start with you. What do you like about
Arkansas? Arkansas is a solid. Look at that resume. It's not spectacular. It is solid. It is a solid NCAA tournament. It is not close to a protected seed, but it is not close to the bubble. They have their solid tournament wins. Yeah, they have the LSU problem. You know, but that's not the end of the world. I mean, there's a lot bigger warts. Look on the other side of this of your screen if you want to see warts, Drexel. The losses, hey, there's a number of them, but they play in the SEC, which this is the deepest, strongest SEC that I have ever seen. So losses to your A&Ms, nothing embarrassing. Even the loss at Houston, I mean, the margin's bad, but the actual loss itself isn't. Arkansas is a solid team. I mean, this is where they should be.
Well, Sleeka, you want to take the counter to that as to why they should be lower?
I would probably say, number one, they're going to be 6-8, home and neutral. So you could – I mean, there are teams that are going to be that high that are going to be there, but I would say their only two wins of note that are away from home are going to be against Oklahoma and at Alabama. While at the time they might seem like pretty respectable wins, Oklahoma – we're not going to reveal for a while, and Alabama, we may not reveal, period, tonight.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. I just want to take a quick note here. You notice that Arkansas has two losses to LSU, one which is a tier two and one which is a tier three or quadrant three. The quadrants are based on whether it's home or road. So that's why LSU, despite an RPI of 87, losing to them on the road is only a quadrant two, but losing them at home is considered worse now, and that's why it's in quadrant three. Quadrant three consists of 76-160 at home, while the 76-135 road is in quadrant two.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying, Chad. I for one have never really believed road and home matter. There's no difference.
Chad, what was interesting about your back and forth, I do want to say real quick with John, was that if you look at John's projected, what he's predicting the bracket to be, he actually had Houston much higher because that was one of the differences. There were five differences between the J&G and Tytel's picks, and one of them was that Houston was higher on his. So
right. Let's take a look at the number eight seeds. Matt, let me bring you back in here on them, where we've got Florida State, Rhode Island, NC State, and Creighton going to Wichita.
A little surprised Florida State's this high. The other ones, I think that's pretty much NC State's, I think, right on the 8-9 border for me. Creighton actually ended up as a 7, but that's giving them a little eye test credit probably. Rhodey, I'm glad to see them down in the 8-9. I thought we probably maybe didn't react to the St. Joe's enough. And funny, I probably dig the more on that than they do a close loss in a pretty decent Davidson team. But all told, their profile isn't that great now, and I think they really belong in an 8-9 game.
Yeah, we got NC State and Creighton in there too. Creighton went over Villanova that probably saved their season after things were looking pretty bad. But Rocco, here are some of those first round matchups for those eight seeds. We got Butler, potential matchup with Florida State, K-State against Rhode Island, Oklahoma in there, and Nevada in there on the 9 line now.
I like it, except Butler I think is a little too early for them. They've been obviously in a big slump. And I've got them closer to the bubble than a 9. But the other three I have right at this 9 level. Also curious why Florida State and Virginia are in the same bracket. I'm assuming just because they play each other once. I just couldn't imagine the committee doing that.
They play each other once, and the committee has done this potential second round conference matchup. So I would.
And if Florida State wins their first round game in the ACC, they'll play Virginia.
And that would become an illegal matchup at that time, so you're right.
But, but I think the only time they've done it, Chad, maybe you know the answer, I think the only time they did it was when Big East got 11 teams, so they had no other choice. I think the rule is they have to have at least 9 bids in order to do that.
No. They've actually changed. The rule has been changed now, Rocco, actually. The rule now is that if you only play each other once, you could meet as early as the second round. If you play each other twice, it's got to be the regional semis. And if you play each other 3 times and not to the finals, but – that there may not have actually happened because there may have been the game may not have turned out that way, but I think there's been one or two situations like that.
Yeah, it was a shame we never answered one hypothetical from I think it was 4 years ago when Butler and Georgetown ended up facing each other 4 times that year because they met in an exempt tournament.
Yeah, they can't meet to the final 4 in that case. David, what about this Butler profile? You want to respond to that? So, do you think they belong up here this high, or should they be closer to the bubble?
They certainly don't belong any higher. Maybe this is about where they belong. I mean, they've proven that they can lose quality games. And, boy, have they done a good job of that. But, nothing is as many games as they've lost, like all but one of them, or I'm sorry, all but two of them, are against teams that are probably making the field or their quadrant one losses. There's Maryland on there. That's certainly not. I don't know. Maybe a line too high.
Does anyone else want to chime in on this? Tytel, maybe on Butler. Where would you be on them?
I mean, I expect that this is might be a little. This is around where it is. I think I'm going to push them lower on March 8th because they're playing Seton Hall, and as Jonas will tell us, how many times has Butler won a Big East tourney game?
Hey, consider I just picked Seton Hall for the Jerome and better not win that game.
Let's go ahead and take a look at the 10 seeds here. These are more potential round matchups. We got Missouri coming in against Va Tech, Providence against Arkansas, Texas Houston, real interesting game there potentially.
Oh,
St. Mary's, Texas A&M.
Yeah, we need to get that one to Dallas somehow.
Let's go to Detroit. Everyone wants to go to Detroit. We already went through this for time.
Oh, no. You got as interesting as Houston and Texas is, you got to swap them with St. Mary's. Detroit's closer to California, and we need the Texas A&M game.
Texas A&M possible there as well. But let me see here. Stalica, what are your thoughts on the other teams here, Missouri, Providence, St. Mary's?
Well, Providence is another team that, outside of their big wins against Xavier and Villanova, they did get – yeah, I think they had a win at Marquette, but I'm struggling to think offhand what other wins would be keeping them in the field, especially when you consider some pretty bad losses at UMass and also at home against Minnesota. While it didn't seem bad at the time, that's aged worse, and certainly losing to DePaul has to be an occupational hazard.
Like, they have a win over all the Big East tournament teams except for Hall.
But they have three tier four losses, not even tier three, tier four losses. I think we're a little high. I think Providence is in, but I think that this came in a little too high for me. And I also want to stress the St. Mary's team, Rocco, you are not high on them at all at the moment. You think they may miss the field.
I do, just based on historical. And, you know, it would be unfortunate. They're going for their 29th win tonight. But those losses and the fact that they were held out 2 years ago give me a lot of hesitation. And like we talked about, you know, with Houston even, St. Mary's will certainly be looked at as a mid-major profile. And their RPI is not in that safe zone of top 28. They're at 37. And so top 28 is the if you guys aren't familiar, is the baseline where every team that's been 28 inside at a mid-major has still gotten an at-large bid in their situation. Well, they're not going to reach that unless they win the whole WCC tournament. So I think the committee's really going to struggle with them. I could see some of the committee members putting them in this 10 area, others not even having them in, and I think they'll probably settle with Dayton if they just beat BYU tonight. I think if they lose tonight, they're probably going to be in the NIT, but we'll see.
They are damn lucky they did not lose to Pepperdine, if you saw that game.
Yeah, they would have been out. They would have been out.
Well,
you're our selection committee guessing expert here. What do you think, especially if they lose tonight to BYU? Do you think the Gales are out?
I don't. I certainly think that they're going to be sweating it out in a few days on Sunday. But the win over Gonzaga, I think, will save the day. Beating Cal certainly should probably hurt them because it's Cal. I could see them slipping into a first four game on the 11 line. But, I mean, if you talk about other teams – who are starting to be in this range. I mean, I know Arizona State beat Kansas and Xavier, what seems like 5 years ago, but what have they done for me lately?
That's a good point. And why don't we take a look at Joby, let me reveal three of the 11 seeds here before we get to the first four games. Then we got Arizona State, who we just mentioned, along with the Bonnies and Loyola Chicago coming in above the first four as well. But Joby, what about the Arizona State?
The losing record in conference, in the Conference of Champions. Walton was trying to say, by the way, nine Pac-12 teams are going to be in
the tournament. Well, it just goes to show you how good the league is when Arizona State comes in ninth.
The Stanford team's amazing. But Arizona State Yeah, they're not doing well in conference, but obviously preseason they did well. So it's such – you talk about schizo resumes. We've already seen a few up. They got one, you know, for you. You know, the loss to Oregon State, not just – oh, we had a loss to Oregon State. Had a loss to Oregon State just last week. I mean, it was like, this isn't ancient history. They're playing poorly. But they do have – I mean, the at Kansas is beautiful. Xavier, that's two number one seeds they beat that sit on the resume. So I do have Arizona State in. I actually have them as my last team, not in the first four. So I bet I'm one of these teams. But we've already listed two of my first four in because I had a nice mid-major matchup of Saint teams for my first.
Let me ask here. Rocco, let me ask you this about this Arizona State team. Their matchup is with Colorado in the first round of the Pac-12, and then Arizona potentially if they get by the Buffs. Do they need two wins?
I don't think they need two wins. But I think if they lost to the Buffs, they would be in jeopardy because we still have three or four conferences where there's a real opportunity for stolen bids. In my opinion, I think they're about eight or nine spots inside the bubble. The reason for that is the committee is going to talk about the body of work. Like Joby just mentioned, they won against two number one seeds. Today, I have USC, UCLA, Kansas State, all as tournament teams. That gives them 5 wins against tournament teams. When you start comparing them to other bubble teams, they actually stand out body of work-wise. And unfortunately, the committee doesn't take the last 10 games into consideration like they used to in the old days. I really hope it's something they talk about bringing back in the past, because it's unfortunate when a team like Arizona State, as poorly as they are playing, shows up in Dayton and they're down by 20 at halftime and everybody turns the game off. It's not good for the sport. But but the way that the rules are written and the policies and procedures are described, Arizona State is pretty safe for right now.
The chances of them bringing that back are almost zero, Rocco, because I think it was the committee that revised that rule itself. It wasn't directed by any of the staff. So I don't think it's coming back.
Right.
It'd be good. I'm seeing a hard time seeing an 8-10 team at the clear-cut number 6 conference get it. Like, this isn't like you went 8-10 in the ACC or the Big 12. This is 8-10 in a league that might only put 2 or 3 in.
Yeah, Matt, I understand that, but it's unfortunate. It's the entire body of work that matters. The conference record doesn't matter. So when you look at the body of work, they were 12-0 outside of the conference, and they beat 2 number 1 seeds and a number 9 seed. So, you know, it's just enough to carry them above the rest of the bubble, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I'm out of everyone here, I'm probably the least biggest conspiracy theorist. I mean, I just don't come up with it. But even I think they might take Arizona State just to emphasize that point.
David, I want to give you two seconds here on the team on the left there, the Bonnies. I know you don't think they belong anywhere near the field, so.
Well, maybe, no. I guess my thing is the win at Syracuse was good. The win at Buffalo was better than what most people will give them credit for. Both of those are probably actually better than the home win against Rhode Island, but I just don't get what impresses people so much about the Bonnies that you think they're a tournament team. They've beaten predominantly sub-NIT teams, and that's all they've done. They've lost to Dayton. They've lost to Davidson. They've lost to Niagara. They've lost to VCU. I mean, these are teams that are nowhere near the NIT even. So I'm just not as enamored with them. And if you like St. Bonaventure, then why would you not like Loyola more? Like, why would you not like Middle Tennessee more, who have arguably, or New Mexico State, who have arguably done the same thing? They have 1 or 2 notable wins against tournament teams away from home, and they've beaten up on sub-NIT teams. So I guess, do I like St. Bonaventure? No. I guess by comparison, why the Bonnies and why not New Mexico State?
At least they're winning games. When you look at teams like Alabama and Arizona State, they can't seem to beat anybody right now. I mean,
Let's go ahead and take a look at the first two of our first 4 teams. They're on the 11 line in the East region. And Titel, Baylor versus UCLA. Do you agree with those picks?
I do. UCLA had a huge win over USC. Baylor's been, as we'll see shortly, all over the map with tons of losses this year. Granted, most of them are 2 teams who are in the tournament.
Because the entire Big 12's in the tournament.
I don't know if they need – I mean, if they beat West Virginia, I think that's near lock status. If they lose by 20, I think they're going to be sweating it out.
Matt, do you agree with that on both these teams?
Actually, I agree. I'm a little stronger at UCLA, and they're like, they don't have a ton, but man, 3 big wins away from home.
Yeah.
And the USC one, that's the one that climbed their stack, where I think I actually had them just above my first 4.
Well, Matt, wait a second. Doesn't Arizona State, who you just beat up on, also have 3 big wins away from home?
Yeah, before the calendar turned to 2018.
Okay, so it is when that game's happened. I just want to make sure that we're on the same page here.
Matt likes my last 10 suggestion.
I also think, and we'll see it when your final reveal, Chad, I think you made a mistake. I have a nice, fun, all-LA first 4 game. Is that allowed? You know, I mean,
let's do it. I don't think they would do it, but no, it is. The way the rule is written, it is.
No, I don't think that they will match up to Pac-12 teams.
I agree. But
let's look at those last 2 teams. There they are. In the East region, also Marquette and USC, the other LA team, did make it in there.
Yeah.
Matt, you are the Marquette guy. What are your thoughts on your own team here, getting in one of our final spots?
This is literally, I think, right where they are. Like, that's, I think I had them like either second or third to last in at my personal one, and that's, I think, pretty consensus. You're either just in or just out. I thought it would have been great for purposes if you had had them in Providence in the first game, because that could have been a fairly easy, maybe not toll decider, but that where now you have Hazy Market. Also, you better damn well beat DePaul. You lose to DePaul twice in the last few games of the year. For I don't even want to watch an NIT game, but you beat DePaul. Then you have Nova, which is weird. Like, can you really be expected to beat Villanova? But at the same time you do that, Marquette's well above the first four. They're something like a 10 seed probably.
I did just want to know, before I reveal – ooh, I showed the wrong thing. Before I reveal the top teams out, I want to reveal the rest of the 12 line just real quick here, because I'm not certain where it falls in here. New Mexico State there on the 12 line against Arizona, Middle Tennessee against Clemson, and Murray against Florida State. The reason I want to realize that Middle Tennessee, by our rankings, actually came in ahead of both Marquette and USC, so right in the middle of the first four there. But, David, I don't think that they could survive a Conference USA tournament loss now.
Depends on who it's to, especially, because you're talking about, as I just said, losing to a non-tournament caliber team again. Western, pretty good. I would imagine Western Kentucky would make the NIT. At least I'd like to think that they would. Old Dominion, not bad either. But they wouldn't face those teams until the finals. If they lose before then, I think they're certainly out. If they make it all the way to the finals and lose to a team that they've beaten twice, such as Western Kentucky, they should have a strong case. I would hope they wouldn't move down too much because of that. But their last game, their last home game of the season after a spectacular season, they have to go out and lose at home to Marshall. And like I said, they didn't shoot themselves in the head. They're not dead, but they sure as hell shot themselves in both feet. And if they don't win this conference tournament, it's not completely out of the question, but I have to say it's less than 50%.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and take a look at the top four teams that were out and kind of take a look at all four of these profiles. Let's start with Tytel. Here they are: Syracuse, Louisville, Alabama, Oklahoma State. Now, let's start with those top two, Syracuse and Louisville. Does that surprise you that we left especially Syracuse out?
No, I think I have them out, and okay, they're certainly right on the cusp, and they certainly saved their season for the moment with the huge win. I believe it was against Clemson last week, if I recall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tier one. Oh, their best win of the season, John. How convenient. I think they'll beat Wake tomorrow because, for God's sakes, it's Wake. And then, Joby, I forget who they would have in the ACC tourney after that.
I think it's one of the Carolina schools.
It would be North Carolina, who's a 6th seed, North, actually. North Carolina.
They'll win that game.
Joby, what about Louisville, who starts with
first? I mean, Louisville's done, you know, they lose to the teams they're supposed to, except ironically Syracuse, and at home. But they lose the teams they're supposed to, and they beat the teams. They do have some nice wins on the road, 4 against tournament, 3 against tournament teams, plus a Notre Dame road game. And all I can say is, if they could learn how to throw the ball in with 0.9 seconds, we wouldn't be talking about them. If they just knew to have a throw it down the length of a court. They, eye test wise, right now, Snyder and Adele, they are starting, in my opinion, to really look like a pretty strong squad right now, at least tournament level. When I look at Syracuse, they're both ACC. As the ACC guy, I can look at with even keel. There is no question who the better team is, in my opinion, between these two, and it is definitely the team from Kentucky.
So you're taking a little eye test there, Tytel.
That's eye test. I get it.
I want to ask Tytel about it because you just
but they have no bad losses, whereas Syracuse has some crap. Georgia Tech, Wake, and the way Boston College is starting to play down the stretch. I don't necessarily love what Syracuse is doing either. Notre Dame at home,
Tytel, you just had an interview with one of the committee members, and how many times does the word eye test come up in the actual committee room?
According to Tom Burnett, who is the Southland Conference Commissioner, he's like never used the term. He says it's all like a media and bracketologist created phrase. His phrase that he loves is intent to schedule. What that means is that if you're going to schedule non-conference teams like Syracuse has done amazingly well, you should get rewarded for that. And it's about the intent, because you don't know how a team's going to be in a year because there's so many intangibles and X factors. You could schedule Missouri thinking, oh, Michael Porter will be a top 25 team with them, or Bonzi will be healthy, Notre Dame will be great. Obviously, ACC, that's taken care of. But stuff happens. But if you show the intent that you tried to go out there and not just play them all in the Carrier Dome, then you should get rewarded for that.
Well, by the same token, they actually brought some decent bye games into the Carrier Dome this year, like Toledo, Iona, Oakland, Texas Southern.
That Oakland's a good example of a intent to schedule, I think. This was a team that was supposed to be actually really good out of the horizon, really disappointed in, you know, at least scheduling that game, I think.
Yeah, I've heard that, and I don't want to throw it out entirely, but you play who you play. And on the same token, should you be rewarded because you tried to do something difficult over a team who actually scheduled harder than you did? Because their schedule didn't collapse. I mean, I don't want to discount it entirely. And the other thing, of course he doesn't believe in the eye test. That would require watching the Southland.
Rocco, our third and fourth teams out were Alabama and Oklahoma State. Let's start with this Alabama team. Just too many losses at this point, in my opinion, although there was some disagreement about them.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. The more I've been – you know, looking at Alabama and what they've been doing lately and where they're at in the RPI, they're down to number 60. They're not on the same level as Vanderbilt last year. And I know that Vanderbilt was the opposite situation. They were red hot and they got all the way to the SEC final, got a lot of big wins down the stretch. Alabama did everything in the beginning and now fell apart. I think if they clearly need to win Thursday against the Aggies, and then they may need another win even on top of that, because it's unprecedented for a 15-loss team to get in until Vandy got in last year. And the bubble is a little bit stronger this year on top of that too. So the more I'm thinking about it, the more I'm thinking it's probably down to about 30% less or 30% or less that they get in. So,
the other team over here, Oklahoma State, Stalika, you were the only one that actually had them inside your field. But they are right there, are they not? Especially if they can – beat Oklahoma in the first round?
I know they have a high volume of losses, but at the same time, none of them would appear to be against teams that are going to be missing the field right now. I know they had a pretty bad bad non-conference schedule, but outside of that, they did get a win against Florida State that was on a neutral court. Also a nice win against Tulsa. Never mind. Skip that.
But
they do have the sweep over Kansas, but also a win at West Virginia, where not many teams have won this year. That just seems to be like a team for Dayton.
Well, Matt, they have not only three, they have five pretty good wins there, three of which were away from home. Well, why shouldn't they be in?
It's because I think either the first or second team out, so it's really close. And be put so if you want to swap them with Arizona State for me, you wouldn't hear me complain too much.
Well, Tytel, this is our ninth Big 12 team. There's only 10 teams in the conference.
Yeah, I mean, you can make an argument for all 10, even though Iowa State's not getting in. I mean, Bill Self never gets swept ever, ever, ever. And they did it like twice in a month.
I think he's testing an alma mater, a nice bulb there.
All right. The next four teams out that we're also wanting to quick mention of, these are teams that may still have a shot at moving up and at least being on those boards. The only three that actually got consideration and votes were Washington, Utah, and Nebraska. The fourth one I threw on there because of what we've been hearing on TV all day today.
Don't watch TV. Don't watch TV. Don't listen to it.
Let me let Rocco start with his Washington team as to whether or not they still belong in despite a couple of bad losses recently.
Unfortunately, it's been a struggle. I had a very similar experience to Tytel watching the Wildcats. I was down in San Diego for the weekend trying to find a place to watch it, and they promised that we found a place that had every Husky game on, supposedly. We ended up watching on our phones, and we played terrible, lost to Oregon. It was a horrible day. But, you know, the other games were fun to watch, so that was good. But
I spent the day locked in the bunker.
Yeah, so it could have been worse. But overall, Chad, they're not playing like a tournament team right now. The resume, they still have a decent shot because they got the the wins throughout the year with USC, of course, at Kansas, Arizona, Arizona State. They need to get that win. Of course, they have to beat Oregon State in the first game, but they'll need to beat USC on Thursday. I think the season's going to come down to that. I think they're going to be right in it till the end if they do beat USC on Thursday, regardless of what happens Friday. So, unfortunately for Husky fans, we're probably not going to have a tournament team if we can't beat USC Thursday. So we'll see how it goes.
Tytel, what about the Utes over there? I mean, they got that. They're on that same opposite side of the bracket from Arizona, potential USC semifinal or Washington semifinal. How far do they need to go to get in?
I mean, I'll defer to my Pac-12 guy, Rocco. Like, if ASU keeps falling, is there a chance that Utah will not have a win against any team who makes the NCAA tournament?
Well, have you seen Utah's draw in the Pac-12 tournament? They can make it to the final without playing a tournament team.
You're discounting Prairie View's chances to win the SWAC. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
The other two teams on the board, Dave, we're not, you're the only one that voted for Nebraska. We're not going to discuss them because I think they're covered. But, Joby, I'd like to bring you back in here on this on this sudden Notre Dame has Bonzi Colson back. Therefore, they are suddenly a tournament team.
Now, the one thing that you have to push back on is with Bonzi Colson, they still lost to an Indiana team within the RPIs and Ball State. So that is case. You know, they need to make a run all the way maybe to the final. I don't know if that would even do it.
Well, yeah,
I think when they say they consider, I think when people hear that, they juxtapose it for the word overlook or discount. They don't. The standard isn't to just get out there in an exempt tournament, play well, and then bench three of your guys for the rest of the season until the last two games and be like, oh, we got them back. No, I mean, you can't just – you have to look at the profile. As they always say, you are what your profile says you are, and Notre Dame just isn't there.
Yeah. Tytel, do you think the committee would you even consider them – I mean, what I'm hearing now, they beat Pitt and they beat Vatek in the second round, that the committee should take them.
Should is a strong word, but I'm telling you that, like, they're going to take a long, hard look. If you look at the predictive metrics, they're all, like, top 35. If you look at road losses, most of them, I think, were without Bonzi. And if he came back and, like, was easing into stuff, that'd be fine. I think he had, like, 25 and 15 the other night over the weekend and the loss of Virginia. Joby can correct me if I'm wrong, if he's still there, which he's not. I mean, with him healthy, they are a tournament team. And you're saying that they didn't get any wins without him. Like, you're right, but – should they be penalized for something that was out of their control? Or do we say, look, we'll look at your team on March 11th, see who you are, and your March 11th team seems like a tourney caliber team. No?
Matt, what do you think?
It's a vexing call. I mean, I'll repeat something. I think I'd rather see them in the tournament than Arizona State, but and then, now, like, I still think, yeah, overall, like, their profile wasn't super even with him, and that's where, like, yeah, two of your three Q3 losses were with him in the lineup. And that with him or without him, you have no business losing to Georgia Tech. I think you could field us five out there, we at least put 55 points up and it'd be the close game against them.
Well, winning at Georgia Tech is kind of difficult, David. I mean, if your name isn't Grambling, at least. But.
Yeah, I mean, well, the first place SWAC team won there, so...
Let's go ahead and take a quick look at the rest of the teams. These are the auto bids. Let me reveal them quickly. Let's start with the 13 line. We see potential first round matchups: Wichita State getting Louisiana, West Virginia getting Buffalo, Texas Tech and South Dakota State, Gonzaga against Vermont. 14 line, we see Bucknell coming in there along with Montana, UNC Greensboro, and College of Charleston.
Don't do it to me, Chad.
Yeah.
I've had Duke and Penn. I actually special just for you, Tytel.
Thank you.
Because everybody loves to go to Detroit.
I'd rather not play Duke. I'll take it.
Lipscomb in their first ever NCAA tournament with an auto bid out of the A-Sun against Duke. We got UC Davis and Wright State there as well.
Wright State struggling right now, but ahead.
Yeah, we may have finally on the second line. We have Iona and Wagner avoiding the first four, and Radford, Texas Southern, Nichols, and Hampton in the first four. But Let me run through each of you. Any other thoughts on what we did here as a whole? Let me, Rocco, let me start with you.
I liked it. I was surprised on how close we were. I think almost every seed line I had at least three of the four teams you released, especially when we got through the middle of the bracket. It's been messy for the last couple of weeks. It's actually looking like it's starting to settle down a little bit. So we'll see how this week plays out. And speaking of that, my final thought would be it's going to be really exciting to see if one of these four leagues will have a bid steal. I think Oregon and Utah with their draw, whoever comes out of that little part of the bracket will have a real good chance of winning the Pac-12 and stealing the bid. On top of the fact that Stanford might be playing the best basketball, none of those are teams in the field right now. Look for any of the three to possibly steal that bid. In the A-10, we have Davidson and St. Joseph's playing great basketball. Either of those could easily take that bid, both with double buys. In the Mountain West, we have Boise State and New Mexico playing really good basketball. Could see them stealing a bid. And then Western Kentucky, if they were to beat Middle Tennessee for the title, would take the auto bid and maybe Middle Tennessee getting in as an at-large. So those are the four, I think, conferences from a bracketology standpoint for all of us to watch the closest.
All right, Joby, let me go to you.
Yeah, I would like to promote Mr. Tytel, our bracketologist. He released his bracket today. I referenced it, and he is either the third or fourth best out of 100 bracketologists over the last 3 years. Fourth over the last several years. This is someone you should come to our site and watch and see and compare. I will promote. And one of the little side things, it's fun to do because, as everybody knows, the J&G, bring it back to what I do, is the J&G is meant to mimic the committee, not to create a power rating. It's not KenPom. It's meant for this process. Can you mimic the committee? And today's J&G actually was pretty close to Mr. Tytel. Got the top four seeds all in the exact same order, et cetera. Our protected seeds were pretty much the same, with some fours and fives being different, but that's not a crazy unusual. And all but two teams correct in the field and only five with a one seed differential. That would be, I'm hoping that our bracketologist is correct again, because it would validate the formula in a big way, to be honest. So, it's going to be a lot of fun to see how close. And I think Rocco's point of things starting to gel, that exercise alone shows that things are starting to gel, much like last year. Last year, things gelled as well. It was the previous 2 years that were a little bit more mixed up.
Let me ask you, Sleeka, let me go to you next.
I hope I'm not stealing some of Matt's thunder here, but while Marquette is going to be playing for a position in the NCAA tournament, Andrew Rousey has a chance to become the fifth player in NCAA history to score 1,000 points at two different schools. He's already eclipsed the mark at UNC Asheville, and if I'm not mistaken, he's going to be 33 points shy of doing it at Marquette. He should be able to rack up a decent total against DePaul, but what he'll do against Villanova, should they get that far, would be quite another story.
All right. Matt, I don't think I've gone to you yet.
Okay, yeah. Well, every year it seems like people bring up a weak bubble. Well, this year it is actually a historically strong bubble. And that, like, speaking from personal experience, Marquette, we've been crunching the numbers, of course, because we're really right on the cut line there throughout. Past years, teams with Marquette's profile would have been like 100% in the field. This year, like I said, it's really about a 50-50 case. And then we're seeing, like, even like I said, Alabama and Vanderbilt are pretty similar profiles from the last 2 years. Vandy was a 19 last year. This Alabama team might not even be in the first four rounds. So we always want to preach about weak bubble. This year, I promote a strong bubble, and damn, why did Marquette have to be right in the middle of it?
All right. Tytel, I'm going to go to screen share, so I'll do that for you as I go to you.
So my Penn Quakers, congrats to them for winning the share of the Ivy League title. They had a little tough loss at Yale by 1 point on Friday night with some refs and stuff. So they finally held on to beat Brown by 6 Saturday night. Then they make the trip home. And as you can see here, when you show up at your campus at 2 in the morning, what do? You go to the gym and cut down the nets. The Palestra College Basketball's most historic gymnasium.
Well, I'm glad they have security there. Oh, it's a good thing.
You want to be standing up?
That's the best, Bucky. That's for people to see.
Everybody goes nuts. One of the saddest celebrations you'll ever see, but cutting down the nets nevertheless.
Did you like that practice, cutting down the nets regularly as opposed to the NCAA bid?
I think if you win some hardware, you should cut them down. I wouldn't even mind cutting them down if you win a sub-regional. So
I should cut them down after every game, you know.
No. If it's a trophy game, sure. I think if you're getting hardware, a first-place finish, a tournament championship, or winning a regional, I think you can cut them down.
But this was a co-championship.
Oh, no.
David, let me go to you for your final thoughts.
and I'll be real quick. I'm not going to be long-winded. I just wanted to look in here at the MEAC tournament. The MEAC tournament is having a horrible technical night. We just saw the worst camera work. And no, there is no camera work. I would like to suggest that ESPN3 and the MEAC get it together, please.
Hey, experiencing technical difficulties. David, I don't know. We weren't having any video for you. I guess we do have some video from you now, but
I've been on the whole time. I was able to. Well, yeah, because there's no miraculously a screen was freed up because the MEAC is having technical difficulties.
Okay, well, I guess on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us. This was our last bracket rundown show for the season. So we will be posting lots of other content, though, for the rest of the week. I know Titel will have his updates daily, I believe, from here on out. We have our video notebooks. We're recording another one of them in about an hour or so here tonight. We've got updates from our mock committee that will be coming up, and who knows what else you'll see on the site. So keep an eye on the site. Thanks for joining us, everybody. On behalf of John Slica, Joby Fortson, Rocco Miller, John Titel, Matt Sikowski, and the puppet, who thankfully still locked his bunker. I'm Chad Sherwood, and have a great night, everybody.